guys ready?
Oh. Starting for it to be three.
2:59.
You can tell I have a meeting coming up, so I'm quite in a hurry. Good afternoon. I call this special meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Commissioner Randy Christman, Chair, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchak. We have one voting item on our agenda this afternoon and then just a legislative discussion. I do want to kind of apologize. Normally, gentlemen have worn jackets and ties when we have voting items on a meeting, but I didn't know we were having a meeting. And I have another meeting that follows this where the people will be not particularly dressed up, and I thought everyone would feel more comfortable. So here I am. The other thing that I do want to say, and I'll probably say more about it at our next regular meeting, but an icon in this agency, John Melke, I am told, passed away. I don't have that formally, but from Facebook and the curling club that he was so important to for so many years. And John worked here for many years and was our executive director until I believe about 2004. And both at work and I know personally outside of work, just a wonderful man. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, did you have any opening comments?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
Okay, we will move into our voting item then, and that is your portfolio, Commissioner, so I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Randy. I move the Commission adopt the order in Otter Tail Power Company Fuel Clause Adjustment Waiver Approval Case Number PU23-81.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. So last Thursday, the Commission received a request from Otter Tail Power Company for a temporary waiver for its energy adjustment rider provision, and they're looking at to recover approximately $14 million. That would generally be collected during March 2023. So what happened here is Otter Tail filed due to Big Stone plant, a coal plant, being offline from November 5th, 2022 through February 8th, 2023, and it forced to purchase high-priced energy from the market in forward energy purchases. This led to what I earlier referenced, the $14 million in additional costs. So what Otter Tail is requesting that instead of spreading this out just for 1 month, which would be the residents who are using 1,000 kilowatts would see an increase of approximately $12.62 per month above February's 2023 rate. But if the waiver that they're requesting, which would be for 4 months, from March through July 23rd, that would be spread out. And if the waiver is granted, the same customer would see an increase of approximately $5.43 per month above the February 2023 rate. Just for clarification, pursuant to North Dakota Century Code Section 4905-05, no tariff change can be made without a notice of at least 30 days to the commission. The commission may allow changes upon less than 30 days if shown good cause. And because we just received this last Thursday, they want it to be effective March 1st. We see that Otter Tail is showing good cause, and the commission finds granting this waiver is in the public interest, as it would mitigate the rate impact to customers. So the commission finds good cause to allow the temporary tariff waiver upon less than the 30-day notice and grant this waiver.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I do, yes. And so I have some concerns about this. I get this. Sometimes it's good if something can be shifted a little bit into a shoulder month from a month like mm-hmm. February, even to a lesser extent March, into a month like May. But by the time we get done with this, we're going to be into July, when for a lot of people they actually have higher utility bills, more usage than they will in March. And what I'm not understanding about this memo is it indicates what we're trying to offset is a 1 month for the, this is for average residential customer, a 1 month $12.62 hit, and this seems like they would be expected then to pay $5.43 four times. Well, I'd rather pay $5.43 than $12.62, but not four times. And so I'm wondering if you can explain how this, how I'm misunderstanding the order.
Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Victor Shook.
Thank you, Commissioners. So I'll give you a little history on how this rider is actually calculated. It's a little complex, but long story short, the simplistic way to think about this is we take 4 months' worth of historical information. And for the March rate, that means taking actuals from October through January and using the total costs for each of those months and then using the actual usage from each of those months, and you come up with kind of a base rate, as it were. Then you go back to the most recent month of actuals, which is January in this case, since the month of February isn't done yet, the company doesn't have those actuals, so January is the most recent. So they look at the actual costs that they had for providing the fuel and purchase power to their customers times the rate that was charged in that month, and they come up with a differential, and that results in an over or under collection. And in this instance, it's a significant under collection. That amount is added on to that base amount that I referenced earlier from those historical 4 months worth of information to come up with the rate that they will charge for the upcoming month. And that's where it's in that over and under where they're proposing to move $14 million from the current over and under collection to those future periods. So, and that's where it gets a little muddy, because the usages are going to be different in those upcoming months. But since we have 4 months worth of actuals that we're using to derive the current monthly rate, it takes a little bit of that volatility and the shoulder months out of the equation to be more of an average. So, long story short, this rider is forever changing. Even without what led to this under collection of $14 million, the Big Stone plant being out, we would expect the energy adjustment rider to change on a month-to-month basis, sometimes up, sometimes down. In the winter months, it generally will go up to a certain degree. So the differential that you're seeing there, so the using 1,000 kilowatt hours times the proposed, or the, let me back up a little bit. If you use 1,000 kilowatt hours times the increase from what the February rate is to what the rate would be absent this waiver request, it would be a $12 increase to a customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours. Now, the difference between that and what they're proposing is just taking out the $14 million. There still is an under-collection that is going to be passed back of approximately $3.5 million from that month of January. It's just that we're taking $14 million of what would have otherwise been in that total and passing that on to the next four following months. So customers won't end up paying that $5 differential four times.
That's why you use the word approximately in the memo.
Yep, and you know, all of those numbers are estimated and approximated. You know, all this is all what we try to use as averages to come up with these rates, understanding that we're going to have some over collection in some months and some under collection in other months.
But what does the $5.43 per month represent then?
January.
So that's just a differential. So I think another way you could look at this, if this January thing never happened at all, if Big Stone was left online and running, we would still, customers would still have seen an increase in March.
Does it apply for 4 months, though? Or how? I mean, you're extending it over a longer period, higher rate. So talk through that and how it doesn't result in them paying more.
Sure. So what we're looking at here is either they pay $7 more in March than they otherwise would, or we temper that down and we move that $7 to the following 4 months at about, my head is not doing math right now, maybe $1.75 per month for those 4 months, higher than what they otherwise would have paid.
So the $12 isn't what it would take to recover this $14 million. That's what you would expect it to be if we added the $7 we need to recover it to what is going to be there anyway.
Yes.
Okay, now it makes sense to me.
It's a very complex kind of, it's a numbers thing, but the numbers do all check out. We've been through these a number of times.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak.
So my question, and I'm sorry I didn't ask you this when we talked earlier, but I didn't think of it. So my question relates more to the $14 million purchases and whether our approving of this deems those automatically to be appropriate. Or is there any, are there any questions we should be asking Otter Tail in terms of those purchases and whether they might have been able to purchase stuff that would have been cheaper or, you know, that sort of thing. Really the reasonableness of those purchases.
Sure. So the purchases themselves were a combination of just MISO market purchases, which are pretty standard across the board. All of our utilities have some degree of MISO market purchases and a certain amount of purchase power agreement purchases. So those are the kind of the bilateral contracts that are referenced. We haven't audited every single one of those that happened. We are certainly able to do so on an ongoing basis. That's kind of one of the provisions of our rules and the tariff that the commission can question the validity of any of the expenses put forward in the fuel cost rider. Because there really are. I mean, there's significant dollars going through this thing.
Mm-hmm. How would you go about doing that?
It's, I guess, simply a request of the company to provide the detail behind it. And some of the detail is actually provided. As far as the MISO market purchases, they do include spreadsheets that have the detail of which particular MISO schedules those came from.
Mm-hmm. MISO. I think in something that's this substantial of an increase, right in the middle of the winter, we should dig in a little bit more on the company's practice for making those purchases and just to ensure that they're looking for the lowest cost options out there.
Sure. And I guess the fact that they did go out and make some of those bilateral purchases speaks to that effect that they were trying to go out there. I mean, if the company, because they really, they don't have any incentive to do this, right? They're going to get these costs recovered, mm-hmm. whether they're high or whether they're low. They're entitled to collect those costs.
Right.
So the fact that they went out and tried to secure some firm priced energy rather than just relying entirely on the market during that outage.
And I agree they are entitled to collect them, but if we were to be able to, or our advocacy staff were able to suggest that there was lower costs available, we could not approve the
right.
higher costs.
Absolutely.
And so I think it's really important that the companies know that we're going to look into that. Make sure that they are indeed seeking the lowest cost options in times like this.
Certainly.
When it's an unforeseen, outage. So, can you guys report back on that?
Yes.
Awesome.
And for such a long period of time.
Yeah.
Just one other note is that we did inquire from Otter Tail why, when they were here last week, why they didn't bring this up to us. It would have been good to have that discussion, and we made it clear that it's the expectation of this commission that when they're here and we're talking about rates, that we talk about everything. They knew this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
So in the future, we'd like to see it brought forth in a discussion so we could have been a little bit more proactive on this.
I want to add something to that, but I know Victor has another commitment, and so if there's any technical questions that might need to be deferred to him, I want to just pause on that. Okay, then I'm going to, on your last comment, I agree with you, except it goes beyond our work session or informal. I don't remember which it was. What was it, last week or the week before?
Last week.
They have one case on their renewable rider that I don't remember when it was filed, but it's a 2022 case, so it's 3-4 months old already. Then, sometime into 2023, they filed another case regarding the profits, or whatever the right term is, made from the MISO capacity auction. So we've been discussing these things for months, pretty much the exact whole time that they just ignored this. And I find that, I don't know what the right word is, but beyond frustrating. Okay, I think I do know what the right word. I find it deceiving and deceptive that they did this. And then just a couple days before, according to their tariffs, this would automatically kick into this big one-month hit, they pop it on us when there's no time for staff to go back and review to see whether, in fact, these were the best alternatives to replace that generation. I am very frustrated by this. But I think I'm going to support it for the good of the customers.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I just want to thank Victor and his staff, whoever was involved in getting us all this information in a very short time so we can make the decision today as we had to. So thank you for a job well done.
Jack, would it be best to open it up for the questions now, or do we need to do that after we have our legislative discussion since they're listed on the agenda?
We can do it in the order you prefer.
Okay. All right. We will open it up. We have no one from the press in the room right now. No one's on the line? Okay. So then we will close the press question part of the meeting, because we don't go into that with legislative discussions. And we will move to the next item on the agenda, which is a legislative discussion. And I think I'll just turn it over to Jack.
Sure. Commissioners, I just handed you out Senate Bill 2009. That's the Ag Commission's budget. And this is actually just a portion of it. If you're starting on page 2, there's sections 17 and 18. Those were recent amendments.
Did you hand those out?
Yes.
Right before the meeting began.
He didn't do a complete copy.
Okay, my copy has page 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's correct. It is, rather than printing out all the pages, I just printed out the last 3 for you, so we didn't have to flip all the way through it. So
I had actually made my own. I thought I was looking at my own.
I apologize.
Start at the same place.
So on page 6, then, there's section 17, which is an amendment, and section 18, which is an amendment as well. I think I've discussed this, these changes with all 3 of you individually, but section 17 adds another factor to guide for the commission to be guided by in the siting process, and that adds L, which is written comments from the agricultural commissioner. And section 18, which provides essentially that the applicant shall provide payment to mitigate any assessed adverse direct or indirect environmental impacts, as well as some other language related to how that will be addressed in the environmental impact fund. And I just thought it'd be helpful to get the three of you together to sit down and have a quick discussion about this to see what your thoughts are on this and how we would like to proceed as an agency.
Well, so regarding the Section 17 part first, I maybe wouldn't be too alarmed. The Ag Commissioner is already on the list of agencies who are notified, correct? Mm-hmm. I thought so. And I'm specifically remembering once, but they have very seldom, almost never bothered. And I do wonder if this kind of... So we have that list of whatever it is in the high 20s, I believe. Without mentioning one of them twice in Century Code, does that somehow elevate that one's comments are more important than the others? Or I think it might be good to just notify, point out to the committee that they are notified and they are welcomed and encouraged to provide comments whenever they want to.
Mm-hmm. When you send the notice to the Ag, who does it go to? Does it just say Ag Commissioner Office, or is it
addressed? It goes directly to Doug Loring.
It does. Okay. Thank you.
And they have come, they did send somebody once to that solar here when we were talking about prime farmland.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that we should make note to the committee that we already take into consideration any comments provided by the Ag Commissioner when he offers them, and it's spelled out in our rules that we notify him of every project. So,
and I think that testimony should include the whole list.
Mm-hmm.
And then just maybe, you know, maybe not exact examples, but kind of a highlighting that in... And someone can correct me if I'm misstating this, but in just about every sighting case, we hear from DEQ, Game and Fish, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, SHPO,
Geological Survey,
in a pretty significant number of cases, at least wind farm and electric, above ground cases. Mm-hmm. We hear from the Aeronautics Commission. Mm-hmm. Kind of a few examples like that, mm-hmm. but in this case, we usually don't, but they are welcome, and that's why we make sure they get the notification.
Well, I do think we should point out, too, that what you stated, what is the message that they want to send by listing that specific agency here versus where we already have them listed, which is in our rules.
It's actually in K as well, right above that, in the factors to be considered. The problems raised by federal agencies or mm-hmm. other state agencies or local entities are things that we are guided by in this as well.
But the list of agencies is in the law, too, isn't
Mm-mm.
it?
It's in our rules.
Just the administrative code, there are 33 or 34 agencies.
Okay.
Because of K.
Okay.
Because of, mm-hmm. you know, problems raised, we then spell it out in the rules who we notify.
So I do think we should have that be noted for them.
And we do notify people beyond those agencies as well. We have a broader list as well mm-hmm. for courtesy.
Okay. So and you agree with that too?
Yep, we. Okay. Yep.
And then in the Section 18 part, there's actually something in here I like. But the fact, as I'm looking at this, that it's changed from that they may provide a payment for mitigation to that they shall. Let me just run this by you, Jack, to see if I'm kind of understanding right. Currently, in something small, we just need to determine whether it's a minimal adverse effect. And if we deem it minimal, we just go ahead and issue the certificate. By requiring that they shall pay at least half of the impact to this one fund means every single thing like that, we will have to assess a value to it. And that value could be litigated by the company that thinks it's too high or by any environmental group that thinks it's too low.
I would agree with you that it does seem, upon reading this, to require a payment for all direct and indirect adverse environmental impacts.
I think we just open ourselves up. We are going to be litigating forever on these things.
Jack, in our discussion yesterday about this, and I had initially seen it like you see it, Randy, but then you pointed out the assessed adverse direct or indirect, and I feel like that provides some opportunity where we wouldn't be requiring those payments, because it could be like we don't have to assess it. It doesn't have to necessarily be an assessed adverse direct or indirect environmental impact. But maybe that doesn't provide that kind of a discretion to us. Sure. It feels like it does, but...
Yeah, and I'm not absolutely sure how we would apply that. I do believe that as we go through, we always are doing an assessment of direct or indirect impacts. We are just looking to minimize those impacts. I guess we read it from the standpoint of assessing as in assessing a fine or a fee, then it would probably indicate to us that we would actually have to assess that through the course of the Siting Act.
And we could determine what kinds of things we're going to assess. A dollar amount to or not.
Would we come up with the assessed value, or who would? I mean, I go back to what Randy was saying. This could be litigated for an insurmountable time.
But we also could kind of stay where we're at and say we're not assessing a value, assessing cost of the stuff that we've seen. Could we? I mean, I'm just kind of playing a devil's advocate here, just trying to figure out where the road through would be, or you know what we'd need clarification on.
I get your point.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm reading it, it seems to me so. If an agency, let's say U.S. Fish and Wildlife, says there is some impact here to grouse. To me, they've, as experts, have kind of assessed that it's there, and it seems to me this would require a payment.
Well, and that's, I think, the easier one, because they've already been doing that, and you know, it's been happening outside of us because of number two, which still exists, by the way, so I don't know how this number two gets rectified with number one in that that example.
But the company currently, in that example, they can work with U.S. Fish, whichever agency I named that said something, to mitigate it, to take their concern about the case off the table with us, and you know, maybe increase the likelihood of getting a certificate. But currently, they don't have to. They can just hope or try and persuade us to come to a conclusion that it's a minimal adverse impact. Mm-hmm. But here, I don't know, you could be right, I don't totally disagree with you, but I sort of feel like it says it's been assessed, that someone has determined it's real, and unless they can prove it's not, we're going to need to find a dollar value for it.
Well, and then in that case, I think it is in direct conflict with the number two above. I mean, I guess we wouldn't be conditioning the issuance, but it says it shall provide payment. It's provide much room for not.
I would say it does conflict with that.
Yeah. So that's that one. It was kind of where I was like, this is a total change in direction from what we've seen. But I'm also, in addition to what you said, I would be worried about what other direct or indirect environmental impacts are we not, quote unquote, assessing today that would we have to, or would we have the discretion not to?
To me, I will say this. I don't have an answer to your question, but in section 18, kind of the rest of that, if that were left, that they may instead of shall, I think I'm fine with the rest of that, unless someone points out something that I'm not recognizing as a concern for us. I do like the fact that whatever this amount would be going there would go to the Environmental Impact Mitigation Fund instead of half of whatever amount goes there going to the Federal Environmental Law Impact Review Committee. That's an important committee, and I really appreciate the work that Feeler does, but I don't really see how it's funded with this. It's a whole different topic. So I think I like the rest of that other than the may to shall.
So you like that it would be directing half that money to this fund?
If they chose to contribute there, yeah. I mean, currently, whatever would go to the Ag Commissioner, half goes to one and half goes to the other. This would put all of whatever goes to the Ag Commissioner.
Yeah, and currently nobody's using this. It doesn't seem like. Currently, when these payments are happening, they're not going to this spot.
Where are they going?
Wherever they choose. Because it's because of number two, we're not involved.
They've been doing their own mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
So then I like identifying where it goes. And I mean, if they're going to pay, if a company is going to have to pay for direct or indirect.
They don't have to. They just choose to.
But, I mean, if they do willingly, then it should go to that fund.
Some of the other ones might be good, too. But they might be bad, you know. but I personally think that the FELIRC, IRF...
Feeler?
Needs...
Is that what you called it?
...to do a better job of making the developers aware of this.
I am fine with getting rid of the B as well. And just staying, recommending that, you know, they get rid of B under 2, 2B, right? And then change the shell back to May.
Randy, I thought you liked B.
B is the one you don't like, right?
Well,
you like it, but you don't think the money should go there.
I like that it's crossed out.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, yes. Okay. You want that there. Sorry. It's fixed. You like it this way. That's what I meant to. And then L would point out that that already is happening.
Yeah.
And we could point out the challenge of directing us to create a payment structure for potentially all adverse direct or indirect environmental impacts. If that's what they're meaning. Or they need to clarify what they mean by any assessed.
And who does it?
Well, that's us. I mean, it's our...
It says an application shall provide its statement to mitigate any assessed. So I looked at it as agencies, when they file or comment, if they... have assessed any adverse. So they're the ones who are saying, yes, there is.
And I would hope we'd have the discretion somehow, since we're approving the permit, to review that
right.
and determine what was ultimately.
Well, as an applicant, they're applying to us. So my assumption would be that we would be making a determination on this.
Because there's always going to be, like, if... Schiphol says it's a little close to a historic site. We think there's some impact, and we think it should be $10,000. The company is saying, "Well, that's way too much." You know, and so we're going to always end up making that call.
Right? Yeah.
Well, and there are a lot of impacts that we address in our orders that agencies don't necessarily come out with a very strong opinion on, but we recognize that there are impacts. So as we're making that assessment, we would have to provide an evaluation, maybe a dollar value to that. And again, it's not like we would have a lot of basis for that, aside from the fact that we know that there would be an impact.
Yeah. I mean, it would create a lot of extra discussion in the hearings. Yeah. All kinds of impacts.
I just think it's very important that this stay May. That
this is Friday?
This is Friday.
I'm fine with that testimony like that.
Just one last thing, because it's a detail in here that is significant. I'm okay with it. I guess I'm kind of okay either way. We maybe have a better chance getting our way on the other things if we don't fight this, but they're also adding that these payments can be for direct or indirect costs, and I'm comfortable with that as long as it's voluntary. You guys too?
Mm-hmm.
So we would just be opposing the may to shall change and then number L up in the previous section.
Do we know any, do we have any information about who provided this amendment, whose idea it is?
I did go back and listen, but I wasn't fully aware of the portion that I was able to get to who really carried this forward or was really the spearhead on this.
Which side, was it in the Senate?
Yes. It was in the Senate.
I didn't hear anyone come and propose this or testify about it, so I expect it probably come from the agency. I mean, if no one comes to our hearings and suggests something, and then they make an addition of something that wasn't in the bill before, I think it would, we should be safe to assume that we had requested that. So,
so you think they commission?
That's my assumption based on... I listened to quite a bit of their hearing, and I didn't hear anyone else mention it.
And who was representing the Ag Commission office?
The Ag Commissioner.
Well, I will say that's disappointing that he didn't talk to us first. That's just... There's no reason not to. It's our law. It's like our section of law. Inserted into this whole thing in an area that we have far more experience than he does. So that was a lost opportunity to try to mitigate some of these problems in the language.
Some of the adverse impact.
Yeah, direct and indirect.
Okay, so...
So, Julie, are you readying up testimony and testifying?
Well, I will testify. If Jack, do you mind drafting a couple of comments and I'll finalize it?
So then, so it's the two changes that we want switched, right? The shall to may and the specific
removal
legal requirement to notify that agency. So we had previously discussed... Julie, you were going to testify on 1097.
Yes, the natural gas.
I did in the first half.
Oh, wait. No, that's a different one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
That's on Friday.
When I looked earlier, 2009 was the only thing in this committee. So I'm assuming, you know, this is going to be a fairly long hearing. If... Do we have someone kind of monitor this or maybe check with the chairman to see an estimate of the time? Just so that... If you have to race away then to testify on this, do you want me to deliver your testimony and that I'll be down there doing the testimony on 1067?
Sure.
Right before that anyway?
Makes sense.
But then if... And I don't see either of our two... 1067 and 1097 going long, I still think I can make it, because I'm also remember testifying on 2097, but that's the third out of four bills that morning, so I think I can do all three, actually.
Okay.
But just in case, we'll want a staff person kind of available in case it gets conflicting.
Sure.
Someone has to read our testimony, or a staff, or you, Commissioner. Oh, but you have one on...
Wednesday.
Oh, that's Wednesday. So you're available for Mondays, too?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
So, 2009 is on Friday, right?
Yes.
Does that right away?
9 o'clock.
Nine.
I think there will be a lot of, you know, it could be that they're not going to get to you for an hour or something. But I was going to recommend anyway, or have maybe, that someone from staff be monitoring that hearing, because I think it will provide us some intelligence into what that committee is looking for, and that we'll probably be up the following week with our budget. And I'd be curious to know how the Ag Commissioner, if he, you know, goes to the basics and tells all about the agency, and whether they liked that or not, or what they're wanting, it might help us in preparing our testimony. So, if you are that patient, to spend the morning.
Are we 100% sure that they're taking public testimony at this? Like from other people? Because some of these budget hearings, they don't.
Usually the opening one they would, you would think. But I guess no. At our opening one, they didn't. We have to find out about that. That's a good question.
And that was at the House. Wait, where were we?
We were
in the Senate.
Senate, but the House is doing it different. They're going right into subcommittees.
Yeah, so we should just double check that we're getting.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah.
Okay. You can follow up on that.
Okay.
So in the meantime, do you still want staff to monitor to see how it's?
Well, I think everybody knows we want someone to monitor. If it turns out we can testify and you're going to go down from the beginning, then we don't need staff to monitor.
So we'll figure out if I can testify and then go from there.
Yeah.
And just for my own clarification, Commissioner Chrisman, 2097, the Scenic River designation, will you be providing the testimony on that?
Oh, I guess I never discussed that with you. So we're going to split that up. And Jonathan is going to deliver the testimony on, that's actually really specific to it, on the fact that it's really important that we be on this list and be notified of those designation requests. And then I'm going to provide a separate testimony, just kind of following up on that this is kind of one of a multi-tiered war on fossil fuels and laying out both this and the leasing and bringing it back together too. So we're just going to kind of divide it up.
Sure.
It's a good plan.
All right, so in the comments then for the 2009, we're looking at being opposed to Amendment 17, the written comments from the Agricultural Commission. And on 18, we are looking to make an amendment from Shal DeMay. And then we'll just flesh out the reasoning behind that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
All right.
Did you prepare yet testimony on 1097?
No. Is that... Which one is that?
That was the utility scale storage publication notices, hydrogen and mount adjustments.
No. The one that you did before?
The one I did before.
No, I haven't done anything.
So do you want me to deliver it as though it was from you, or should I just do my previous testimony?
Do your previous, but we have to add that testimony for the...
The amendment.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And then there is a bill tomorrow that I haven't got my testimony done yet either. For and that's the natural gas extension, the
tax exemption.
Yeah, so I'm sorry I don't have it for you to see yet. I'll send it tonight. It won't be anything real crazy. I actually think that the people testifying do a really good job, so I might just have them go first and then just reflect, like, as you've heard, there's a lot of great reasons for this. The small towns need it. It's important for economic development. It's not a loss of revenues. We've certainly seen the value of these extensions at the Public Service Commission and support the continued use of natural gas for home heating and industrial development. It's the one of the most efficient uses for natural gas, etc. So it'll be pretty straightforward.
Did you testify this on the yourself?
Maybe we'll draw on some of the testimony from a previous session where we were in favor of, I believe, an exemption allowing more additional distributive infrastructure to small towns and rural areas.
I did pull some of that up, and a lot of the people that testified the last time pulled a lot of that information into their testimony, so...
Gotcha.
They did a really nice job, the folks that testified, it seems like.
That was a good explanation.
Anything else? Thank you, and we are adjourned.